Hey guys, welcome back to the Paddler's Playbook, a kayak fishing experience. Today the guys are joined by Glenn Madden, aka Professor Salt. Get your pads and pencils ready because offshore class is in session. In this two-part episode, the guys cover different types of offshore kayaks, safety tips for the newbie, and the Paris Hilton technique. So sit back, relax, and enjoy the paddle.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to Podcast Land. I'm your host, Drew Turner. I'm here with my co-host, Chris Lewis, and this is another edition of the Paddler's Playbook. We've been talking about doing this episode for a while now, and I think right now is prime time to get this episode out. This is going to be an offshore episode. We're going to talk about all things offshore, from basic rigging. We're going to talk about different kayaks. We're going to go through a lot of stuff today. So I hope you guys have your pads and pencils out because the professor is in the house. Now, before we get to that, Chris, I got to ask you, man, what's been going on since the last podcast that we did? You've done any fishing? I know we had a great turnout for the life jacket challenge. Did you see all those pictures that were posted and all the likes that we had?
I did see the pictures, man. Some of those guys got a little out of hand. I mean, come on, fellas, take pictures with your pants on next time. The life jacket challenge went great. We had a lot of really good participants. There were even families that got involved and not just individuals. So I appreciate and applaud all of our listeners that wanted to raise the awareness wearing our PFDs to stay safe. Now you asked the question, have I been out fishing? Have I been doing anything lately? I don't know if I put this out there on our last podcast, but my kayak has been a little dry lately. It hasn't been getting wet because we added a new toy to the house. Basically, the wife and I had always said that once we pay off the cars, we would go ahead and add a skiff to our fleet of toys. And that's exactly what we did. We paid off our car in, I believe it was January, February. We went ahead and picked up a little skiff. And so we've spent our weekends kind of learning how to fish out of something a little bit larger than a kayak. And it, I tell you what, guys, it is different. If you're ever thinking about branching over from the world of kayak fishing into boat fishing, be prepared to change most of your tactics around. Fortunately, it is a small skiff. We're able to draft in about 4 inches of water. So therefore, I'm able to fish almost like I'm in a kayak. So that's pretty much what we've been up to, Drew. We've finally got some kayak tournaments coming up here pretty soon, so I'm going to have to get the kayak wet, and hopefully all goes well and I remember how to do those things again.
Well, I tell you what, whenever I went out with a good friend in his skiff, we were poling around in the marsh back there, and my poling skills were very lackluster, and I actually ended up using the poling stick as a paddle. Makeshift paddle, and I paddled us through the cuts because that's what I was used to, and that is so I was standing on top of the poling platform with the pole out in front of me and digging one end and then digging the other, and I was paddling us through the marsh. So that was a very interesting experience.
How you do it, Drew. That poor stiffy pole, man. $600 stiffy pole, and you're sitting there slinging it around like it's a paddle.
We got out of the marsh though. We got out of the marsh and he didn't have to pole at all. I haven't got out really and did too much fishing, man. I've been in the garage building rods lately. Some of you guys may have seen I launched my Turner Rod Co. Facebook page recently, trying to get some nice custom rods out there. And then, you know, I haven't been fishing at all, but I think I may have made the biggest catch of my life so far. I actually, since the last episode, I am now an engaged man. Jessica became my fiance.
We're gonna have a Mrs. Jessica Turner in the mix.
Yes, we will. Yes, we will. So I have my fishing partner for a long time. You know, it's great spending time with her. You guys hear me talk about her a lot. and for good reason. We spend a lot of time together out on the water, and she's very supportive of the podcast, and she's very supportive of the rod making and any other stupid ideas I have. She's supportive to an extent.
For those of you that don't know, there are quite a few of those ideas that Drew has. If you spend any amount of time with Drew, you'll find out this dude has got ideas that pour out of his head and like a leaky faucet.
I'm always trying to do something. There's always something that's the newest, greatest, next best thing that I'm trying to do. But I'm settling down now, you know, getting engaged, and I'm really excited about it. We plan to get married. We're going to wait a little bit before we have the wedding and stuff, but I'm sure we'll talk about that a lot more whenever the time comes. But enough about the... Oh, go ahead.
I didn't get the chance to say congratulations to you in person. Of course, the only way I was able to say congratulations was through Facebook the day that you proposed. But here I am today, right now, on our podcast. Congratulations, Mr. Drew Turner, and congratulations to Jess. She landed herself a fine man. You're a great guy, great father, great friend. So, and you know what? Jess is a great person too, and I know you guys are going to have a lot of fun together.
Yes sir. I'm excited about it. Well, you know, it gets to a point in these introductions where I always say enough about me, enough about you, Chris. Why don't you tell them about our guests?
So guys, I gotta tell you a little bit about this guy. Okay, he has been feeding our brains, I want to say, for at least the past 10 years. Just like ideas drip from Drew's head, this guy's been feeding us ideas and notions of doing crazy things for at least 10 years. As far as I know, I started watching his YouTube videos about 7 years ago, and I'll tell you exactly how I started watching his YouTube videos. I bought a Scupper Pro, an old school Scupper Pro, and I'm looking for YouTube videos of anybody else that's using a Scupper Pro. And there's this dude paddling a Scupper Pro next to the USS Lexington. And at that point, I had to figure out who this guy was. And he started popping up a lot on the TKF forums. And he helps us to DIY things that you never really would have thought of before. Ladies and gentlemen, this is the offshore king of Corpus Christi, of our lower coast, Laguna Madre area. I mean, the guy's tearing it up down there, and he's paddling at least 10 plus miles a day. Please welcome Mr. Glenn Madden to the show.
Well, thank you, guys. You set the bar pretty high, but I'll see what I can do to kind of meet my end of it. I don't get to paddle 10 miles a day. If I had a little more time, I would, but I certainly put in the miles when I get a chance to, because I'm one of those unusual kayak fishermen that actually loves to kayak as much as I like to fish. So I enjoy being on the water, whether I've got fishing going on or whether I'm just paddling.
Well, Glenn, I am the classic fisherman. All my stories are going to be exaggerated just a little bit.
Yeah, that's why I started carrying a camera, because people didn't believe what I was telling them. So I started carrying a camera to back it up, and turns out a lot of my stories are true.
Yeah, there you go. I wish I had that discipline. I always leave the cameras behind.
For those of you that don't know, Glenn is also known as Professor Salt. If you frequented the TKF forum when it was an actual forum back in the day, when, you know, you had Mythman, you had Professor Salt, you had some other old salties. I say old salties. You had some other very experienced guys that were all over that forum, all on TKF. And I'm sure, like a lot of the guys, you know, Facebook kind of ended those kind of forums, but there was some really great information on there. And there still is some great information on the TKF forum itself.
Glenn, do you spend any time on the old forum anymore?
Yeah, I do. In fact, they recently made me a moderator on it.
Oh, goodness gracious.
So
somebody
I've
got to
spend some time on there. But there's not as many people coming on, and, you know, as many new and curious people as there were back in the day. But like you said, it's still a great venue for finding information and kind of picking the brains of people that have been there and done that, to be able to kind of speed up your learning process so that you can get on the water and be successful.
Well, you know, it's it is a vault of very useful information. Yep. The search feature works very well. You go in there and you can look back 10, years ago to see what was going on in a specific area if you want to. I do love jumping on there for that specific reason. The search feature is great.
Yeah, that's a pro tip Chris has talked about before. If you're looking to fish a new area, go find some of those forums like the TKF forum and just search the area that you're looking for and find, there's going to be a lot of posts that pop up from 5, 10 years ago that, are probably still relevant to the area that you're going to fish. But, talking about the vaults and, talking about going back a little bit, Glenn, let's go back with you. So we asked this to all of our guests on the show. Why don't you tell us about what maybe your most important fishing memory or the first fishing memory that pops up when someone asks you to, talk about fishing. Let us know what that big fishing memory for you is.
Well, you asked me about that the other day and I was thinking back and, my dad, when I was young, was not a great fisherman. We would go camping and we'd take fishing rods and we would, throw bait with a weight out and see if something would eat it. But it was not, the kind of active fishing that a lot of us like to do now, where you're being very, very proactive and searching for fish and hunting fish. But I think my first memory of kind of the precursor of what I have become is we had an old man at church, old World War II Marine vet, cool guy. And he asked me one day, he says, "Hey, I got a boat. I like to go offshore, and my wife doesn't want me to go by myself anymore. Do you want to go fishing?" I said, yeah. So I spent every Saturday for 4 summers. This was early or mid 80s. And the longliners had been a menace offshore just before that, I guess, and had decimated the kingfish population, believe it or not. So we fished for 4 summers, trolling ribbon fish, trolling lures, and we caught one kingfish in 4 summers. So it was,
wow.
It was not good fishing, but it was good times. I learned how to set up the baits. I learned how not to be seasick. It took 4 years to figure that one out, but I eventually kind of got my sea legs and figured out how to handle the motion out there. But getting to see stuff, we had a whale breach in front of us one day. Nobody thinks of whales being near the coast and in the mid-Gulf, but occasionally they are. Ran across a whale shark one day and just some cool experiences out there with a guy I really had a lot of respect for. I think it was Okinawa he fought on back in the day. And so I really like those old guys that did some big historic stuff. Oh,
real good stories, yeah.
You can't get them to talk about it, but they're there. And he was that way. He didn't want to talk about it, but I just enjoyed spending the time with them and kind of learning. Sure, they have
good life stories, though. I mean, like life lessons that they could talk to you about.
Sure.
Good conversation with people like that. So, yeah, I can definitely see where you're coming from in showing appreciation for that person. Hey, so for the listeners and for myself, explain the use of the term longliner.
Yeah, so commercial fishermen do something similar to trot lining. If you freshwater people run trot lines, and that's a pretty common occurrence. Longlining is the offshore version of that, where the trot line is 1 mile, 2 miles, 3 miles long, and they bait hooks. They'll put glow sticks next to the hooks to attract fish, and they can go through. It's a very efficient way to harvest fish out of the ocean, and if you're not regulated, they can pretty much decimate your fish population. So I think the rules must have run those guys out from the nearshore areas and state waters. And over the years, the kingfish have pretty obviously become very thick again. And if you're out in the summertime and looking for kingfish, you can find kingfish. They're kind of omnipresent.
Within a mile or two from the shore.
Yeah. Or less, yep.
Or less,
Yeah, you can find them jumping out of the water down there.
You can catch them off the jetties.
And Yeah, in the Corpus area, I remember, you may not remember this, Glenn, but I was down there with Todd. It was me, you, Todd, and I think it was a gentleman named Jonathan, and we were pre-fishing for the Blue Water Kayak Classic at the Mayan Princess rig, and I got 2 dozen ribbon fish, and I caught 22 kingfish that day. Yep. It was crazy. It was small. I mean, they were all small. They weren't going to win the Blue Water Classic, but it was kingfish after kingfish that day. And it's been a while since I've been back, but catching kingfish from a kayak and just that initial burst of speed whenever it hits your reel, that is something that, you know, I love catching redfish, but just hooking into a big king, that is a completely different experience than anything else that you can find on the Texas coast.
Local fish will make your reel scream like even a small kingfish will do that.
Stop. Opinion time. Here we go. Drew, you like to eat kingfish?
Does
it taste good to you?
I will eat kingfish, yes. I like a smoked kingfish. Like a smoked kingfish dip is really good.
You're out. You're already done.
I don't love kingfish.
With the smoked kingfish dip.
I don't love kingfish, but I will eat kingfish. But I'm not a huge fish eater, though. We've talked about this before.
Glenn, why do people eat so much smoked kingfish dip?
I think because they're not aware of how to properly prepare the kingfish to begin with.
So do you like eating kingfish?
I do. I don't eat too much of it because I know they're on the mercury watch list.
Yeah.
And they only recommend that you eat kingfish below 36 inches, and I rarely catch them that small. Most of mine are in the mid-40s and up, and you're just not supposed to eat them very often. So what I do is we got lots of older folks at church who are on limited incomes, the fixed incomes, they're retired. They could use some fresh fish. So I'll bring in all the kingfish I can get. I fillet it, bag it up, and on Sundays I'll take it to church, and after services I'll hand it out. And there's never a shortage of takers.
Why are you giving me gray meat?
The first time they did, and I told them, I said, look, it will not cook gray and soft. It looks like it's gone bad when it's raw. It just does. But when you cook it, it's firm and white and flaky. So the biggest thing to me with kingfish is, number one, when you bring it out of the water, put it on ice, keep it cool. And then number two, when you fillet it, is get the red meat off. The red meat is very fishy. If you get all the red out, the rest of it does not have a fishy taste. It's good.
So my opinion on kingfish is the same as yours, as long as you can clean the meat properly. Salt and pepper, butter and lime is all you need. It's a delicious fish. It's hearty. I do like fishy flavored fish though. Like when people are like, "Ooh, I don't like eating fish. It tastes like fish." I'm going, "Well, yeah, it's supposed to taste like fish." You know, when I go to a Vietnamese restaurant, I ask for extra fish sauce because I love the taste of fish. So kingfish is on my list of one of those top feeders for my table. I like it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, next question.
It's really good smoked with some cream cheese, a little butter, some Ritz crackers. It's really good. All right, so Glenn, how did you get from fishing with the vet, you know, from church to getting out there on a kayak? I know we talked a little bit before. Maybe it wasn't a kayak at first. Let's talk about maybe your first kayak that you had or paddle craft. You know, what got you out on the water to begin with, and where did you move on to from there?
Yeah, so I did have kind of an intermittent time frame of probably 15 years where I worked with a surgeon at the hospital, and he bought a sport fish boat, 29-foot Blackfin. It had a downstairs cabin with air conditioning. It had a bed. It had all this stuff, and we would run 7 rods at once when we're trolling for marlin. So that was fun. But also with my dad, we went together and got a 16-foot McKee Craft, little center console, and we would run out for kings and cobia every chance we got. And so we put in a lot of time doing that. At one point, my parents decided they were going to move up to West Texas, closer to my younger brother, who's a fire chief up there, and they sold the boat. I thought, wait, I thought I was half owner of the boat. I guess I'm not. So I lost my way offshore. And I thought, well, I got to do something. And I had mentioned that I was desperate to get offshore. I really wanted to get some fish, and it was a gorgeous flat day. And I had an aluminum canoe in my backyard. And please, if you're at home and you're listening and you have an aluminum canoe, do not take it to the Gulf of Mexico. Don't do that. But I did. And I paddled out to the rigs, and I caught fish. I think my second trip out, I hooked into a shark that ended up just over 8 feet long, big shark.
Wow.
And he pulled
an aluminum canoe.
Yes. And the game warden stopped at my truck and was watching me in binoculars for, I don't know, an hour, hour and a half. And he came up to me when I landed and he says, "Man, Mr. Madden, what are you doing out there?" And I thought, how do you know? Oh, you ran my plates. Okay, you know who I am. I said, yeah, I was catching a shark. He said, oh, you think so because it pulled you around? And I said, you didn't see me holding him by the tail for 30 minutes trying to wrestle him into the canoe? And so I didn't realize it was as heavy as it was. I was thinking 120, 140 pounds. I can get him up in here and push him forward, keep the head away from me, take him home. Let's have a barbecue. Turns out I ran the length and weight for that type of shark, and it was closer to 325, so I was not going to lift that fish. So I ended up letting him go. But it was an interesting experience. And I also learned it was about a one-foot surf day. I was coming in, and one little wave caught me, turned me, and totally swamped the canoe. And I realized real quick, this is not the smart way to go offshore. So it has not been offshore again. It's been parked in the backyard for years. But I went out and found a used, what was my first one? Malibu Extreme. It's a 15-foot, 30-inch wide battleship of a kayak, and it's made for offshore.
Very popular for offshore fishing, yeah.
Yeah, and not the most efficient design, but it's not too bad. And I put, I can't tell you how many hundreds of miles I put in that kayak offshore, caught a lot of fish, had a lot of good times, did some spear fishing. Met a 13-foot hammerhead while spearfishing and decided, okay, no more spearfishing. although the hammer was not really interested in me, was not a problem, but just swimming next to one that size it's very intimidating.
So we do like to talk about kayaks a lot, not just a kayak experience. And so yep. I want to point one thing out about the Malibus. Malibu tends to be a very popular kayak amongst BTB fishermen, and right. I think it's because of its efficiency in the surf. It actually handles the surf really well compared to a lot of other kayaks out there. And is that the version that has like the really large center hatch?
That one did not have a real big center hatch. It had a huge front hatch, and it had a big tank well in the back, big enough to fit a 55-quart cooler if
That's
you wanted
a big
to do
cooler.
That. Yeah, yeah. I did that a couple of times and realized, hey, that does not help in the surf. So I found a fish bag. That was a much better way to go. I
hardly see people in the Malibus anymore, but
because so many kayak companies have tuned in and decided, let's really be scientific about this and how do we make better performing kayaks? And they've come a really long way in the last 5 or 6 years.
And Malibu's still making the same molds.
Yeah. To their credit, Malibu is from Malibu, California. Their waves and their surf are way different than ours.
Yes.
And so I would assume they're better suited to that type of surf that's, you know, 10 or 12 second period between waves. You can sneak out and in between waves pretty well. But with the Texas coast and so sloppy, it's about 5 seconds, maybe 6 seconds between waves. It requires a little more agility and ability to get up and move in between those.
And on a real sporty day, what, four seconds between waves?
Maybe, because sometimes we get sets from two directions at the same time. And they're tricky because they don't come in with equal timing, so you really have to be careful.
Since you guys are talking about kayaks, let's jump into some of the questions that we got on our Facebook page, The Paddler's Playbook. One of them we got was, you know, from a good friend of the show, Jesse Salas. He was wanting to know, you know, what are some good kayaks for offshore? What type of length are we looking at? You know, what are some of the more popular ones that you would be looking at?
Yeah, kayaks are almost like cars. So you ask any guy, what's the best car out there? And they're all going to give you different answers. So kayaks are personal.
They're going to be nasty about Chevy.
Or Ford. Yeah, everybody has one that they love and one they hate. And that's okay, but it's not the only answer. So with kayaks, if it's a design that, number one, is watertight. And not all kayaks are watertight when you're in rough conditions. So that's a big one. You know, people are forever asking, new beginners are asking, hey, what about this FS12T from Bass Pro Shops? Is that a good kayak? And sometimes people will rib them and mess with them like it's a Chevy or Ford truck, whatever one they don't like. And they'll tell them, no, it's a terrible, because some people have had bad experiences with it because the hatches don't seal as well in the surf. If you're working in shallow water, you're working in fresh water, it's not an issue. But in the surf, a lot of waves come over the front. And if the seals are not good, it's going to end up in the hull of the kayak and really screw with your stability. So you need a kayak that stays watertight. That's number one. And then if you want to go longer distance, the further you want to paddle, the more you kind of need a longer kayak. So to me, beyond that, it becomes a personal choice. You know, if you like the feel of a Scupper Pro and it will do what you want to do, it is a good kayak. I'm 6'4 and 235. It's not an ideal kayak for me. My butt barely fits in the seating area.
And I went back and found that video. I had to go back and find that video. And that's the first thing I noticed was I was like, damn. He's a big dude to be inside that kayak.
Yeah, my Malibu had developed a crack in the bottom, and a friend of mine said, hey, I've got this Scupper Pro. I'm not using it. You can have it. Who's going to turn down a free kayak when yours is being repaired? So
not only that, but a classic like that one. That's a fantastic kayak to me.
So I kept it for quite a while because I liked it. It's a performance kayak. It's fast. It's got a lot of rocker, so it deals well with choppy conditions. It's just not ideal for a guy my size. So normal size people, awesome kayak. But I needed one that was built a little more for an oversized guy. So the last few years, I'm in a Viking Reload, which is the biggest Viking. It's a little over 15 feet. I believe it's 28, 29 inches across, but it is truly a paddler's kayak. It's designed to go through the surf well. It looks fast. It's smartly laid out by fishermen to be able to do what we need offshore. So it's really well thought out for what you want to do. And like I said, it's a personal choice. Will everyone be real happy with the Viking? No, but a lot of people will because it's designed by an offshore guy on the other side of the world in New Zealand who said, nobody makes the kayak I want. I'll make it. And he had the means to do it. So that was kind of a cool deal. And then the last couple of years, I was able to find a way to afford a Stealth kayak, which is, I believe Stealths come from South Africa, but it's a fiberglass ski. They don't call them kayaks, but it's truly a high performance. It's kind of the Lamborghini of kayaks. It's not for everybody. If you're fishing in the oyster reefs in the shallows, do not take that kayak out there because it's fiberglass and the oysters will shred it. But if you're going offshore from the sand, you can't catch that boat. Other people, I've had game wardens pull me, you know, they catch me on the beach and say, hey, what kind of motor are you running? And I'll just flex and say, two stroke. But it's just paddling, but it's an efficient boat and I'm pulling hard on the paddles, but it's a very fast boat. So I can average in mine 5.5 miles an hour for miles on end, which now, very few kayaks can do.
Glenn, I'm going to have to disagree with you on something here.
Yeah.
And that's that oyster will destroy fiberglass. Now it does. Scratch it up a little bit. Polyethylene plastic is going to be a lot easier to repair than fiberglass, but I love the way that my fiberglass boards just glide right over oyster. It doesn't bother me one bit.
Maybe I should modify my statement and say, I cringe when I think of taking my Lamborghini into the oyster reefs.
Now, your Lamborghini, that's what I was going to say. You see, you got this kayak that's, you know, actually it's more like a rare Bugatti or something, because you don't see those here that often. I know Roy's can get them every now and then, but they're high dollar, they're high performance, and it's not like my you know, paddleboard. I can throw it in the back of my truck. I'm not worried about it. I can throw it out there, go over oyster. I'm not worried about it. Yeah, this high performance machine, you don't want to take over the oyster. But fiberglass, I'm not worried about it too much over oyster. Now, as far as the one of the most popular offshore kayaks, I want to know if you guys agree with me on this, that the Hobie Outback is probably one of the most popular offshore kayaks, and people are concerned about length, but that's only a 12-foot kayak.
On the Texas coast, you're absolutely right. It's very popular, and a lot of people...
Florida, too.
Yeah, Gulf Coast. And it may be outside of that. That's what I'm familiar with. But it appeals to people, I think, for a couple of reasons, and a big one is you pedal with your feet, and so you're using leg muscles. A lot of people are comfortable with that. It also reclines you in the seating position because you got to lean back a little bit to pedal. And so it's a big appeal for a lot of people. But one of the reasons I initially got into kayaking was I got in a car accident. A cop rear-ended me in traffic, just wasn't paying attention and clobbered me. And they fused the bottom three levels in my neck in surgery. And so when I was recovering, I realized I can't sleep well at night. I need to do something to strengthen my shoulders so that everything is tight and I sleep better. And I discovered kayaking is the closest thing to magic for that. The more I paddle, the better I sleep. And I sleep like a baby these days. And that kind of was my driver. And so people keep asking, why don't you try a Hobie? Why don't you try this other one or Jackson or whatever pedal kayak? And I personally am not interested because I need to paddle. That's part of, for my health. That's part of my motivation.
Now, you know, Drew is a physical therapist or a PTA, I believe. And you'd probably agree that paddling a kayak is great physical therapy. Would you, Drew?
Oh yeah. It's really good for your shoulders. It's good for your rhomboids. It's good for your lats. It's good for, you know, a lot of the musculature on your back and in your shoulders. And, you know, you were talking about paddling just now, and we're talking about kayaks, and you're talking about the Lamborghinis, but, maybe some of the Corollas of the world that probably need to be talked about for some of the people that are just getting into the kayak fishing. The Tarpon series, Tarpon 120 through 160 are great offshore boats. The Trident series from Ocean is another one. The Viking Reload is one that I know you've talked about, and I fished out of one of those before, you know, kind of getting into the more Cadillacs. You're talking about the Revo from Hobie.
Sorry, how about the one that Glenn made popular around the world?
The Santa Cruz Raptor.
Santa Cruz Raptor. Drew, have you ever paddled one of those?
I paddled one of Rex's before.
He had a Santa Cruz Raptor?
Yeah.
I did not know that.
Did you paddle it at the tournament on the Gulf Coast?
Yes.
Yeah, that was mine. Rex borrowed it.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that's when I paddled it then, was Blue Water Classic. Man, I miss those Blue Water Classic days. That was just a beach gathering of, you know, everybody from Sabine all the way down, you know, past Corpus. Almost everybody was down there beach camping. You would just walk up to a group of people and you would see everybody that you knew from the Facebook pages and from the forums and TKF. You know, I miss those days.
Yeah. It was more of a hangout than a tournament.
Yeah, the tournament was fun.
Once they started to make it more tournament than hangout.
Well, Chris, it was more of a hangout for us because we weren't going to win the tournament anyway. We didn't have the knowledge to win that.
Yeah,
but
right.
For some of these other guys, it was more of a tournament.
We're inshore guys expecting this to pop up. Actually, you know what? Weiland got a paycheck from one of those tournaments.
Yeah, I think he was the only one that weighed in the snapper. That's why he won.
And that's the fun of that kind of tournament. You just never know. So I had the Extreme tournament from Florida. That series came over here for one, and it was aptly named. It was extreme weather. We had 20-plus miles an hour all night long.
That weekend, yeah.
And out of about 180 people that entered, and it was not a cheap tournament to enter, only 90 of us attempted the surf. And three of us caught fish. And I almost threw my first kingfish back, and I'm so glad I didn't, because it was worth $2,000 in a custom rod. Yeah, yeah, it paid off. Wow. So it was one of those things. But yeah, Kayak Classic was always a fun one because it was as much just a cool hangout and get together. And I always found it interesting. People thought of me as a star sometimes, and I thought, I'm not a star. I'm just a regular dude out here having fun. I want to help other people figure out how to do the same thing and not get hurt.
Speaking of not getting hurt, you know, let's jump into safety.
Yeah.
Some of these new guys going out there, you know, what is the bare minimum that they need to have with them on their first trip offshore? Or maybe even I'm of the thought that if it's your first time to go offshore, don't even take anything with you. Go practice entering and exiting the surf all day before you even think about going out in the surf fishing, because you're gonna turtle sooner or later. But you know, what is some safety advice you could give some of the newbies and the first timers, and what are some things you absolutely have to have on your kayak?
Well, first off, is pretty obvious, but you've got to wear your PFD. You've got to have one, and know that when you jump in the water with it on, it will not shift and ride up and hang out around your neck and shoulders. It needs to stay in place. So wear a PFD that's comfortable to stay on all day. And then, like you said, Drew, when you first start out, don't even take fishing rods. Just get out in the surf and enjoy it and stay around other people. Some people are looking to get away from everyone and go do a fishing trip first time out where they're away from anyone. And if you get in trouble, it's not where you want to be. So my first three trips that I took in the first kayak I had, I went to Bob Hall Pier and launched. And the first time I went just outside the surf and hung around, I wanted to see what's it feel like to paddle sideways to the waves when you turn left side to the waves versus right side to the waves and then heading into the waves, heading away from them. What's it feel like? And it's a very different feel than what you'll find in other areas, in the flats or in a river or a lake. Not the same thing. So it's a very different feel, but it doesn't take too long to get used to it. So, yeah, playing in the surf is really a smart way to do it. And if it's just you and the kayak and you learn, hey, my kayak takes on water in the surf, you haven't ruined a bunch of gear. You haven't ruined your day. You've enjoyed it. You're learning. And you figured out, okay, I got to fix some things about my kayak so that it doesn't take on water. But once you decide, okay, I've got this down well enough to go fishing, number one, don't be a hero about it. And if you show up at the beach and it's big surf, if in doubt, at the very least, first take your empty kayak through the surf and get past it and decide, do I want to do this loaded down or not? Because I've seen a lot of guys take all their gear and lose rods and reels in the surf, break their boats in the surf, lose a paddle drive or a pedal drive. A lot of bad things can happen in the surf if it's rougher than what your capability is set to handle. So playing in the surf when you're learning is really valuable. You don't have to be able to surf your kayak in. You don't have to be able to make any fancy moves. You just need to learn what the surf looks like and what it feels like so that you've got a realistic view on what you're going to be facing when you go in and when you come back out of the surf to be able to get through safely.
Now, let me jump in real quick, because you talked about you don't have to surf your way back in. Something that people still do today, and I don't know why it's called this, and maybe one of you guys know, but whenever you're coming in, you can also come in backwards. So Paris Hilton. Why is it called Paris Hilton? Why is it called Paris Hilton?
Oh, we can't get into that on the podcast, man.
Come on, Chris. Yeah,
that's
tell me why it's called Paris Hilton.
So it's got some nefarious beginnings from that name, but basically, Paris Hilton style is where you're coming facing the waves and you're slowly allowing the waves to push you backwards. But the advantage there is you see the waves coming so that you're not surprised and swept up in a wave. You can paddle into it so that you take the impact of the wave and then slowly drift back. So for guys that are worried about flipping in the surf, that's a relatively common way to come in, whether you know to call it that or not.
Yeah. And you can adjust going whenever you kind of get knocked backwards or you get knocked sideways and you're not straight up with the waves. When you're coming in Paris Hilton, it's a lot easier to adjust a forward stroke than whenever you're surfing into me. You can control it better. So right. What you want to do is you want to try to keep your kayak as straight as possible. You want to be perpendicular to the beach. So you're, exactly, you know, right. you're straight. And then you paddle, kind of slowly paddle up to the wave a little bit, let it push you back. Now, if it starts pushing you to the left or the right, you paddle forward to correct that to make yourself straight again. Because the reason you're going to get flipped and the way that you're going to get tipped over is when you get a little sideways in those waves and that force starts to roll you. It's not going to come over the back and completely swamp you down and flip you that way. It's likely going to hit you from the side. It's going to turn you sideways and it's going to roll you and your poles are going to be flipping everywhere. Chris posted a video on the Facebook page a while back of over at Bolivar. And, you know, we were talking about going out talking about going out and trying it just with the kayak. If you're a little nervous about going, you know, maybe down to Corpus, going 3 or 4 miles offshore, or, you know, going out a surfside and hitting those rigs, I believe those rigs are like 5 miles off. You know, try to find a group that may be going out at High Island for the Bull Red Run. And that's a nice introduction to BTB fishing for some of the newer guys out there.
Yeah, it's a simpler version to make a short trip. You've still got the surf to deal with a little bit, but it frequently is not too bad. And it allows you to get offshore, kind of get the feel of being out there in bigger water. Your point about being perpendicular to the waves, especially, I mean, it's equally important when you're paddling offshore or if you're coming back to the shore, to keep your kayak perpendicular to the waves. So you want to be pointed straight into the waves or have your butt pointed directly at those waves to be perpendicular, to kind of make a T with them. And if you don't paddle and control your kayak in the surf, it naturally wants to turn parallel to the waves. And when that wave crests and rolls, it will roll you right off the kayak. So that's where you lose control and it's not easy to hang on to it. Although there are techniques where you can brace with the paddle and you can hold yourself upright as you ride that wave out when you're stuck in the rolling foams. It's one that takes some practice.
I tried that a few times and I was very unsuccessful in that, but go ahead, Chris.
So we talked about, using the Paris Hilton technique to come back in, using the bow of your kayak to come back in. Now there's also another technique, called the Snooki. You guys ever heard of the Snooki?
I'm afraid to ask what the Snooki is.
That's when you just bail off the kayak.
And yeah, when I was first coming in, if it was a rough surf day, that's what I did. I'd bail off outside the third bar and hang on to the back of the kayak. And that way I would be kind of a sea anchor and hold my kayak perpendicular to the waves. The waves would wash over and pass the kayak, and I would safely get all my gear back to the shore.
I was hoping that you'd be able to tell me why they call it the Snooki.
I had not heard it called that before. I'm a little afraid to imagine why it's called that, but
I'm not even gonna think about it. I'm not even gonna think about that one.
But you know, the typical way I would come in over the years was after I got comfortable enough not to bail out, I would come in tail to the waves. But I would slow myself down to a stop as that big wave hit me from behind, and it would pick me up and move me. But if you need to, you can put your feet down to either side and slow down. And that was the key, was don't get going too fast, because thermomolded plastic kayaks don't get up the speed to surf. If you can surf that wave, good for you. Do it. the stealth will do it, but most kayaks will not. So you're safer taking your time.
My old scrambler could,
uh-huh.
But of course not very well. And it was a short, skinny kayak.
Right.
Like 28 inches, only 11 and a half foot long. That one was a lot of fun playing in the surf. But I spent more time sideways than I did straight.
Yep.
Well, again, I'm coming in Paris Hilton because, Glenn, you were just talking about, you know, hanging your feet over there and using your feet to go. That might be great if you're 6'4". But if you're my height, your feet are just going to be dangling over the edge, just kind of flopping. So
your experience may vary.
Yeah, there's no steering with the feet. All right. So we talked about, you know, practicing.
5'5 and 240 is going to be tough.
Hey, I'm 5'8 without any shoes on. 5'9 with my cowboy boots. All right.
Hey, back to some safety stuff, though. I know you're about to get back into the safety stuff, but I had a question for him. And it's not necessarily a question, but bringing it back to the PFDs, because you said wear something that you're going to be comfortable in all day. Yeah. For our novice guys, for our guys that are not very familiar with what is comfortable all day, some of them are going to automatically pick something like an inflatable. And an inflatable is not going to be a good choice offshore. You need to have something, in my opinion, that is going to do its job all day long, regardless of whether or not your CO2 cartridge is good.
Right. And the few times I have ended up in the water, surprised, I wouldn't have had time to manually inflate a life jacket. It was kind of like, boom, you're in the water. Uh-oh. How do we stay at the top and breathe and then figure out what issues we've got going on? And it was never a fish ripping me off the boat or anything. It was always related to the surf. But when you get quickly dumped, and I've had a few times that I was dumb enough not to remove the hooks off my rods.
Ooh.
And I had a boat turn over, a rogue wave. It was a flat surf day, but a rogue wave popped up on the fourth sandbar and stood me up and rolled me. And I was under the kayak. A rod from one side had the hook stuck in my chin, and a rod from the other side of the boat was stuck in the back of my PFD, and I was pinned under the kayak. And I thought,
and all within a matter of seconds.
Yeah, within literally one and a half seconds. And I thought, what an embarrassing way to die. This is stupid. And I ripped the hook out of my chin and came up beside the kayak and thought, this is not fun anymore. This lesson learned, I'm not doing this with the hooks anymore. So I always remove all the hooks before I run the surf, just because even on those flat days, you never know. One of those rogue waves comes through and it will ruin your day in a hurry if it happens to you.
So for in your mind, what is the most comfortable PFD? Full PFD.
Yeah, and I wear full PFDs, but I don't know that it's one specific PFD more as much as it is a style. I like the high back PFDs, so you can sit in your kayak chair without sitting against the PFD float. The float behind you is higher than the level of the kayak back support. So you're sitting against your kayak seat, but the float is up above that. And I like one that has some mesh openings in it. I've got an Astral right now. I can't remember the specific model. It's the safety orange Astral. I think it's the only one that comes in that color, but it's very airy and light. I actually went out in the bay one day and was 2 miles into my workout before I realized I wasn't wearing my PFD. And I never go without it, but it's so comfortable. I was 2 miles off before I realized, I'm not even wearing it. Because normally when I'm wearing it, I don't even notice.
I believe the orange one that you're talking about, just off the top of my head, that's the one that also has the ability to hold a VHF radio.
Is that correct? It does. It has a couple of mesh pockets on it.
Yeah. Okay. I know the Roni Fisher has the ability to hold a VHF radio as well. I can't remember the name of the other one, but Astral makes top quality PFD, guys. Astral, NRS, Thulquist. You know of any other top name brands out there? I'm just saying this because you don't want to mess around whenever you're offshore. If your kayak takes on water,
you'll find that no matter where you kayak, but especially offshore, it's critical. If you're going to spend good money on one piece of equipment, make it your PFD. And I would say second to that, make it your paddle. But your PFD your life depends on it. If your kayak goes down 5 miles offshore and you lose your radio, you're going to be floating for a while. And that's your lifeline. So it really is. The one I've got, I looked it up. It's the Astral V8. And on Amazon, it's about $120. It's not a cheap life jacket or PFD, but it is extremely comfortable. It's well built, well made. There's no metal to it. It's all like the zipper is plastic, so it won't rust or corrode or any of that. And I've had that one for a year. It's getting a little faded with the sun, but it's an excellent one. I'm going to replace it with another one just like it.
Yes, sir. Now, Chris, if you're looking to get a new life jacket, you know, you're looking to get one of these Astrals, you're looking to get one of these Ronnie Fishers, you know, you're getting into offshore fishing, but you need a nice life jacket like the Lure Angler that we gave away from Old Town, which is that high back. Where can you go to find those?
You know, first thing I'm going to do is I'm going to check out ACK. I know that they've always got a huge stock of various PFDs and not only inflatables for those guys that want to wear inflatables, but they also have some of the high dollar full PFDs. And hey, you know what, Drew, in a couple weeks, and this will air probably 1 week before Father's Day. And right now on ACK, they've got some really cool Father's Day gifts listed on their website in their shopper's guide. Not only that, but right now, if you purchase any Yeti cooler, $199 and up, you're going to get two free Yeti mugs. You heard me? Two free Yeti mugs. Guess what? Throw that TPP15 right on top of that. You're going to get 15% off as well. So we're talking a Yeti cooler, $199. Knock that $30 right off the top. $169 plus you're going to get two free mugs at ACK.com.
And fathers love those mugs.
Well, if you're getting two, you can keep one and then give one to Grandpa.
You can
dish those suckers out, buddy. Dish those suckers out, yeah.
Hey, guys. I hope you enjoyed this episode. Make sure to check out ACK.com for some of those last-minute Father's Day items. Make sure to tune in to part two of this offshore episode where the guys cover VHF radios, rigging for kingfish, cobia, and snapper. Of course, Drew will have to talk about pen reels, and Professor Salt will discuss offshore setups. So be on the lookout for part two.